The character planted in the audience that you'd never expect to be on the payroll. And when she plays her big scene, she creates more heat than you could ever imagine. Now here's the secret. She's a stunt granny.
Into a very exciting, very special edition of Stunt Granny Audio. This is Dan Zurah, Z-O-U-R-A-H, is in the 5-0 Missouri Tigers, Teaster, making his Stunt Granny Audio debut as a host, and we'll explain why that's going on here in just a minute, with my very special guest, one of the founding fathers of the Stunt Granny universe, Eric Nelson. Eric, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing all right. I've been trying to dust the cobwebs off from the cellar that I've been living in for the last few months. The small amount of time that I've spent watching professional wrestling has been usurped by either teaching a class or having a full-time job or going to concert. No, not concerts, going to concert. And the concert that I went to, and thank God I went to it, it was a life changer. It's the whole reason we're here today. So I'm doing well. Your Cards just won this afternoon. So how are you doing, Dan?
Well, I'm doing great. And for those folks that don't know, the Stunt Granny community has a wager on the series between the Pittsburgh Pirates, Kevin DeFranco's team, and my St. Louis Cardinals. And Michael Wacha today had a no-hitter going through 7 innings, I guess,
nice.
It was. And then finally, Pittsburgh hit a home run to lead off the 7th or the 8th. I forget. I was very nervous. And they had to pull him. He allowed one hit. We allowed one hit the entire game. Won 2-1 in a real battle. And now the series is tied 2 games apiece. And Mr. DeFranco and I have a six-pack of Missouri, I guess, versus Pennsylvania beer.
Tell me what the Missouri beer would be, because I've had, is it pronounced Shafley? I've had Shafley before, and I'm kind of lukewarm on it, and lukewarm is not the way to drink beer, so.
No. Even though it's Kansas City, we have a couple of options, Eric. At Columbia, Missouri, where I'll be frequently in the next month to watch some Tiger football, has a nice local brewery that I could pick up some stuff there.
Tell me the name of it, because I was just there. As you know, I was just there a couple of weekends ago, and I had what I think might have been a local brew. What was that local brew?
Well, Flat Branch is the brew pub.
Okay. I've not been to the brew pub. I feel like I had something relatively local. Maybe you and I can confer offline. And as we're all contributing, I think a lot of us or all of us are contributing to the year-end or beer-end beer and review article as per Kevin's request. So I want
to
make sure I get all my ducks in a row
here. I'm less of a connoisseur than you guys. I stopped, and obviously the St. Louis beer is Budweiser, and I'm not going to, he's a bit of a beer snob, so I'm not going to do that to him. and that makes sense. I mean, even though they got taken over by the Belgians, it's still considered a Missouri beer.
That would be like putting a nice dinner on the line and then taking the guy out to Perkins or Denny's. Wow, it's been so long I didn't even go straight to the Denny's joke. God, put me out of my misery now.
Yeah, but I mean, Budweiser's above Denny's. Come on,
yeah.
Let's be fair. It's not that. I mean, Perkins is a better analogy. So I went to the bar to watch the first few innings of the Cardinal game, and not much was happening. And I stopped at, you have to go to a liquor store here in Kansas to get beer that's not 3-2. And so I stopped and I thought, boy, should I get Anheuser-Busch products to try to help the Cardinals today or not? And I elected to go with the Newcastle instead. And I'm having my second Newcastle, which for a Monday is very rare for me. But it's very unusual for the Cardinals to be up against elimination as they were today. And it created great nervousness for me. So So that's I don't know where that falls in the beer snob category, but I'm a fan of the Newcastle Brown Ale. So
I think that falls to, you know, most people don't go to the bar and the first thing they ask for is Newcastle. So I think you're on the right track there. I will say this before we get too deep into the concert conversation. They had, at the venue where I went to see this show last night, they had $5 premium tall boys and $4 domestic tall boys. And I'll get more into the tab here in a second, but I will say that I tried something called an 8-bit. I'll have to do my research.
Oh, 8-bit's again, made in Manhattan, Kansas. Tallgrass?
Okay, yes. Well, Tallgrass, thank you. It was Tallgrass Brewing. It's not too damn bad, and it was 5.2. I was okay
it's
with that. For $5? It's, yeah, hell yeah, it's damn good. It was on the, we have a store here in town called Beer Crazy. It's in Urbandale, Iowa, and they have very few staff picks. You know, once you start picking everything, it dilutes the value of a staff pick. They had two
exactly.
The last time I went, and one of them was the 8-bit, and I didn't buy it at the store then, but I did, which, by the way, it would have cost me like $1.90 at the store. Spent fucking $5 on it last night at this concert, and I'm glad I did. 5.2, it'll get you effed up.
The tall can? Was it a tall can?
It was a tall can.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great beer. That's made right here in Manhattan, Kansas. And to give full disclosure, I had a Budweiser at the bar. So I was like, I got to have one Budweiser to try to help the Cardinals win. And then when I went to the liquor store, I know I had one. I'm not, you know, we're doing this under somewhat sobriety. But then I went to the liquor store. I thought, well, I'm nervous. I got to keep having another beer or two, and that's where I got the Newcastle. So,
well, I understand. Well, no, trust me. At this concert, knowing how much beers were, and again, we'll get into more detail in a second. I had a couple of Bud Lights. I had to pace myself. So no,
sure.
As snobby as we are, sometimes there's a place for a Bud Light, a Budweiser, or whatever. Whatever sort of, you know, urinal water we have to drink on occasion.
My beer like that of choice is Bud Select, but yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
Yep.
A lot
talk
of places
to,
don't have Select.
Talk to Derek Price and Steve Williams about seeing Bud Select 55 ads in Chicago. You couldn't. It was like a Starbucks. It was like, I don't know, like a fucking nightmare. Everywhere we turned, it was in summer of 09. Everywhere we turned, we're advertising for Bud Select 55, and now every time I drink one, inevitably, one of my friends gives me the limp wrist reaction or the high voice reaction or whatever. But I have a girlish figure to watch, so I'm okay
there
with
you
a 5-calorie beer on occasion. Give me shit.
I have not checked the – I don't even see any health information on this Newcastle. I'm probably – God knows what I'm doing, but oh well.
That's a good sign.
So anyway, we'll move along. We'd even talked about maybe talking a little wrestling on this audio just so I can rant and rave about my disdain for the current more the management of the product than the product itself, although
yeah.
I think pretty much everyone's in agreement that they are doing a really poor job in terms of building characters in wrestling. But we
yeah.
may or may not get to that, probably won't, because the the topic du jour today is a concert by my favorite musician. I think it's safe to say, just that I have some bias for people that are a little under the radar. My favorite performer, I think, to see live, with the possible exception of Bruce Springsteen, which I can never get this close to and see at this type of environment, and that's Frank Turner. And Frank Turner and the Sleeping Souls played Des Moines, Iowa last night, and Eric Nelson was there. And just wanted to get a little background on, a little description of the show, and I want to know all about the set list and things like that, but just kind of what made that a good show or a great show and why you went. So I'll just kind of start out with your overall impressions of the show, and you can take it from there.
Well, it was a great show, and Dan, I want to thank you, first off, for turning me on to Frank Turner. I would hope that it would have happened inevitably, for as much as I try to follow music and artists, like you said, that are somewhat off the radar. I know Frank, he's had quite the career in England, and he was recently picked up here in America on Epitaph Records. From a distribution standpoint, they're a punk rock label that I've been buying CDs from forever and ever. They would put out like $5 punk compilations, and I would buy those when I was a broke high school kid so I could learn about new bands and new artists. So I think it's really cool that an American record label picked up on this guy and they're trying to spread the word on Frank Turner. And it's working. I mean, obviously this movement is turning into something. Dan, you've experienced this, and I've got friends that have too, and the more I hear about it, the less it surprises me. Even in Des Moines, Iowa, you go to a Frank Turner show, and just about everybody in the crowd knows just about every word to just about every song. Yeah. This guy, like you said, he's a performer. He does more than just sing songs, and this is more than just like a gig or a concert or a show. This is like a borderline life-changing experience, going to see a Frank Turner concert. The venue itself is called Woolies, W-O-O-L-Y apostrophe S. You can check out their website. It's pretty cool. They bring in a lot of good acts of varying genres. Really cool venue, probably fits about 700 to 800 on, I mean, if the fire marshal had to come and check on the place. Acoustics are amazing in there. The sound system's great. Stage is fantastic. Everybody's still relatively accessible. For full disclosure, a friend of a friend of mine is the bar manager there, and a friend of a friend of a friend of mine is the band promoter there. Not that that got me anywhere, but I follow them very closely. So when I found out on June 27th that tickets were going on sale June 28th, I picked that shit up immediately, thanks to your high recommendations. And apparently about 300 to 350 other people around Des Moines did the same thing. The place was probably about half full, which for a Sunday night in Des Moines, Iowa, for a relatively unknown artist, is pretty goddamn good. And when you texted me at one point during the night and said, how's the crowd? My response was, about 50% of these people are singing about 70% of these songs to about 80% of their possible volume. So, I'd say for a small market, unknown, untapped as far as Frank Turner's concerned, they said they've never played in Iowa before. So I would say that's pretty damn good representation of Des Moines, Iowa, really getting to know Frank Turner and his songs. Overall, performance-wise, I would say they were dead on. They made a point to note that, I don't know if you knew this or not, Frank Turner actually injured his back not too long ago.
I did know that, yeah.
He showed off his back brace, and he was saying he likened his outfit to something that Marilyn Manson would have worn in the late 90s, as he pulled his shirt up and showed off his corset/back brace. And he said he checked in with his doctor and said, doctor, what should I do? And the doctor said, well, you can't do anything. You fucked your back up, so you're going to have to cancel all your shows. And Frank said, well, I'm going to go ahead and not do that. So they enlisted the services of another acoustic guitar player. So Frank didn't play last night, but he sang. The guitar player was great, and the rest of his Sleeping Souls band was intact. So they had two guitars, bass, keyboard, and drummer, and everybody kind of switched off. He had mandolins once in a while, percussion, stuff like that. But, man, they were spot fucking on. Their performance was great. His 2 hours worth of singing, which, folks, you've probably never seen or heard Frank Turner, so I would say go check him out. And when you hear the British passion in his voice with which he screams, sings this British folk punk rock music of his, to know that this guy can keep this up for 2 straight hours and do it every night, night in and night out for the majority of the year, you'd be shocked to know that this guy was dead on the entire night. This guy was a born performer for being a tattooed, skinny, was he calling himself a skinny, half-assed English country singer?
That's right.
That's about the most appropriate description of this guy. But, man, he's got the fire in his belly, and you can tell by this performance last night.
Well, that's great to hear, Eric. I've seen Frank Turner twice. The first time I saw him was at a place called the Record Bar in Kansas City. And I should, I really did want to go up there. You told me about the show, and I was like, man, I really want to go and see that. And I see tonight he's in Omaha, which
yes.
would have been slightly easier for me to make. I think they added that date later. I did not know he was coming to Omaha until I just noticed that. So I'll have to check his website and make sure he's not detouring down here to Kansas City or Wichita or somewhere where I could easily get to.
Right, yeah.
The first time I saw Frank was in the Record Bar in Kansas City. It was literally a sold-out show, but most people here don't probably know the Record Bar. Holds about 250 people. And they had the thing crammed up against fire code. And I had bought 4 tickets for the show because I wanted people to experience this. Well, it was on a Thursday night, and Frank wasn't scheduled to take the stage until about 11:15. I don't know why. They had an earlier show or some darn thing. And so people that were going to go with me pretty much bailed. But I was able to sell the tickets because they literally did turn people away. Now, that venue, again, only held about 250. It was the same deal. I was sitting next to a guy at that show that had come down from Wisconsin just for the show. And,
wow.
It was amazing. And, you know, we were having a hell of a time, and we all knew all the words to his stuff. And I stood right on the side of the stage, but in the front row, which granted there were 250 people, but still. And what was so cool about that show was he kept saying, "I can't believe I sold out Kansas City." Exactly.
Very cool.
It sounds kind of funny, and you think, oh, he's making a joke. But he was dead effing serious. I mean, he was so thrilled that, and I guess they played that venue before and not sold it out. And he was so thrilled that people got turned away for the show. Not that he wanted to get turned away, but that things were starting to catch on a little bit, that it was just awesome. And then I guess about a year ago, he played Lawrence, Kansas, similar type venue to what you're saying, probably a little bigger crowd, I'd say about two-thirds full, maybe 450 to 500 people. Well, probably about the same. About the same crowd from what you're saying. I got the sense that he'd really been killing it on that tour and that he put on a hell of a show. He didn't hold back at all. But I thought that he was hoping for a little better crowd, and I noticed they weren't playing. At least I don't think they're playing Lawrence or Kansas City this time. And I thought, well, maybe that's why, that they didn't draw quite as well as they were hoping last time. But the last show I went to, I stayed around till the show was over, talked to him, got my picture taken with him. I mean, he always hangs around after the show and hangs out with fans and just, you know, super cool guy. And this is a guy that will play Wembley Arena in England and draw 12,000 people. So
right.
I feel like we're getting a real special opportunity to be ahead of the game. And his music's starting to hit a little better on SiriusXM. I really think it's a matter of time until he's at least playing, you know, 2,500, 3,000 seat venues, but I could be wrong.
No, I could see the same thing, and to that point too, I think I would like to think that he drew well enough, you know, even at half capacity. I'm sure he didn't say as much, but I'm sure he was just as surprised as anybody that he was able to sell 300 tickets to a show in Des Moines, Iowa. I will say that of the two owners of the venue, one of them was a big fan and the other one had tried to book him in Des Moines multiple times and they finally got around to doing it. So I think these are the promoters that I'm going to lean on to make sure that Frank Turner makes it back to Des Moines sometime. And you're right too.
Well,
he's an incredibly accessible guy. The first act was,
I got to say this.
The first act was, and I'll talk a little bit more about them. They're called Cuckoo Kangaroo. Frank was standing in the crowd the entire time. Don't know why I didn't just go up to him and say, "Hey, man." I mean, he was clearly watching the act and was having a good time. I didn't feel like I wanted to interrupt his good time. But you're right. I mean, he's a man of the people. He would have been somebody who I could have easily approached and said, "Dude, 2 years ago I didn't know your name, and 23 months ago it fucking just totally made a difference in, you know, everything that I listen to in music." And I, you know, maybe next time I'll get a chance to do that.
Yeah, he's a super genuine guy, and he would have appreciated it. So you didn't stay after the show to – I mean, we haven't talked this through. We said we were going to do it live on the air or live to tape. So you didn't get a chance to visit with him or anything, huh?
I didn't stick around after the show. I pretty much made a beeline for the car. I will say this, that I did get to – it's kind of funny. At the end of Frank's set, he was, you know, giving kudos to everybody and introduced his band and then said, "Thanks for sticking, you know, watching the openers, Cuckoo Kangaroo." And I'm kind of like, I keep my head on a swivel at all times. I like to look around and see what's going on. And I look at about 8 o'clock and I see the lead singer of the second band, who's called the Smith Street Band, a punk rock band out of Australia. And I saw the lead singer standing back there. And so Frank says, and thank you to the Smith Street Band. And I just spun around and I stick my hand out and I shake the guy's hand. And he was like, "Holy crap," you know, like didn't expect anybody to recognize him or say anything to him. Like, I was like, "You guys are fucking awesome." That's kind of my go-to line whenever I see a band for the first time and I want to say something to them, because I know they'll appreciate that sentiment.
Yeah.
So no, I didn't get a chance to see, you know, up close and personal or say anything to Frank, but I was glad I got to say something to somebody because it was a really damn good show, so I had to let somebody know. As opposed to the time where I was waiting outside of Vets Auditorium after Monday Night Raw, and I told Davey Boy, at 16 years old, I had the balls to tell Davey Boy Smith, "Good show," and I thank God every day that all he said was, "Thank you," instead of slapping me upside the head for telling a professional wrestler he put on a good show. I at least told somebody at this concert they put on a good show.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, I'm trying to think. When we were 18, maybe-ish, we'd about the time I graduated high school, we would hang around the Shrine Mosque in Springfield and kind of at least say hey to some of the WCW guys as they'd leave the building. Yeah. I remember the only thing that stands out about that to me was seeing Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom walk out without their masks, even though it was obvious they were the Minnesota Wrecking Crew too. I kind of thought maybe they'd wear their masks outside the building, but they did not. So that was that's the only similar type story I can recall. But when I first, like I said, I went to see Frank in Kansas City, the show literally went to 1:30 in the morning, and I had to teach a class at 8:30. I lived 2 hours from Kansas City, and I was just like, I tried to stay around for a few minutes because I knew he'd be super cool to his fans, and I was just like, I can't do it, man. So I was talking to this guy from Wisconsin. He's like, oh, yeah, he's so great. And it had turned out that, like, he got to the record bar earlier that day and played trivia with everybody at the bar.
Oh, that's awesome.
And him and his band beat these locals, and they got really pissed, I guess. And I remember I mentioned that to him in Lawrence, and he was just laughing about it. He's like, yeah, these guys were kind of upset. And I don't know. Great guy.
Well, he seems like a studious and learned type of person. He said that whenever they go into a new town or a new market, he likes to learn something about the town. And, God, you know what's funny is I've lived here for 4 years now, and I can't remember half the stuff he said about our town. Something about, he was like, you're the third biggest city in terms of headquarters for insurance. And we're like, oh, yeah, sure, go us, you know. So he's rattling off all these facts about Des Moines, Iowa, which is funny. And I don't know, he had a couple of good ones, too. He said, at the end of his set, he said, I like to play a cover tune that's pretty regionally specific, but I can't think of any bands from Des Moines besides Slipknot. And although I think their first record was incredibly good, probably not going to play anything by Slipknot.
What cover did he do?
He actually played Tom Petty, American Girls. It was great.
That's what he did in Florence also, yeah.
Oh, man, what a great tune. And he slowed it down, and you know, he did the whole crowd participation thing, and just a really good, you know, really good cover of that tune.
Yeah, no, that's the same one he did in Lawrence, and I thought it was very appropriate. I thought it was really great.
Now, see, I committed the cardinal sin, by the way, because I know you want to ask me about this, the cardinal music fan sin and concert goer sin of not recording, as in like jotting down writing or anything like that, the entire set list. And I should be ashamed of myself for not doing that. I can remember the majority of what he played, and I can speak intelligently to it, but I couldn't tell you like all 21 songs. I can tell you that he kicked off with I Still Believe and then played Don't Try This at Home. As a great 1-2 punch, which I think the folks who don't know him need to go check those two songs out. I Still Believe is a great set starter, and Don't Try This at Home is a great sort of like mantra type of song to introduce people who may not be familiar with Frank Turner to, oh, this is what he sounds like, and this is what he believes in. So I think that was an excellent way to start the set.
And I guess everybody on the side is familiar with this, but just to be sure, why don't you spend a minute talking about your own musical background and why you have a little more insight on this stuff than myself or most people that are just kind of laymen?
Well, I don't know what translates into more insight or less insight or that sort of thing, but I will say I grew up in a musical family. My dad played bass in cover bands and in country bands. You know, he won local regional awards for country music that he played, and we always had guitars, bass, drums, pianos in the house. We always had musicians running in and out. My dad was always in the studio, so I'd go tag along with him. You know, our best friends in the family are musicians. So grew up in that sort of environment. And then, you know, I took a few years of lessons in school. Didn't really cater to that too well. I don't care too much to have people tell me how to do things that I could probably figure out on my own. So at one point, I just picked up a guitar that we had at the house, and I said, Dad, I need you to teach me a few chords. He taught me how to play the song Basket Case by Green Day, and from there I was kind of off and running. I pick guitar, I play a little bass, I can tinker on the piano, not too well. I've got a drum set in my basement, played some saxophone. I kind of want to buy another one to see if I can reteach myself how to play saxophone after playing in middle school for a while. I've got a rock and roll band that I think, you know, the majority of the people know about. I've plugged it, you know, ad nauseum for the last 6 years, so I don't know. I'm a music fan. I'm a musician. I consider myself to be a musician, as opposed to, there are a lot of people who own a guitar, but, you know, I would consider myself to be a pretty strong musician. I've written enough and composed enough songs that have made it onto, you know, nationally televised TV programming that, I'd like to think I have some credentials. So when
you've been paid to do this a fair number of times.
And I get paid to do it, too. I wouldn't call myself a professional musician, but if somebody offered me the chance to do it, I wouldn't sneeze at it. So, you know, when I seek out new bands, or when I'm introduced to new bands, I've got a pretty strong filter. And when you turned me on to Frank Turner, it was a road trip you and I took up to Waterloo, Iowa for the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. And you said, based on your excitement over Frank, but probably on, you know, you understanding that I get music and I like stuff like that.
Yeah.
You said, you got to listen to this Frank Turner guy. And you put him on, and, I mean, within one song I was sold. I'm like, this is what I've been looking for 9 years now. Since fucking Fallout Boy and Good Charlotte and all this other dog shit that tries to mask itself as rock and roll music, there has not been one decent rock and roll band in the last 10 years. So I am so grateful that I got to know through you. I got to know Frank Turner and the Sleeping Souls. It's literally the only concert that I've gone to. I mean, I'm struggling to think of another show that I've been to that my own band wasn't on in the last probably 12 months. But I made a very specific point to buy tickets to this show because I knew how good he was and I knew how good the performance would be. I put everybody through my own personal vetting process. I remember when I worked at the record store in high school and people would come up and they'd ask for, you know, I'd be playing a Real Big Fish album over the loudspeakers and somebody, no offense to Metallica, I grew up listening to Metallica too, but somebody, some fucking hillbilly from Fort Dodge, why don't you play some Metallica instead of this shit, you know, and I'd be like, why don't you go home and listen to the shit you want to listen to? I fucking work here, and I have access to the stereo. I got to stand here and deal with you assholes for 6 hours a day. I'm going to listen to what I want to listen to. So I'm pretty opinionated, too, as far as that goes. I've also been told by renowned music critic Don McLeese, a guy who's written for the Chicago Sun-Times, the Austin American Statesman, Rolling Stone. He's been in the New York Times. I've been told by him that if, in his words, if your day job as a rock star doesn't pan out, you've got a future career as a music critic. So for him to say something like that is pretty fucking high praise. So
Absolutely. Anyway,
I'm trying to credential myself in as modest of a way as possible. Like, I appreciate you saying that, and I guess that kind of gave myself a chance to, you know, set myself up
who
hopefully can be trusted.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I mean, it was cool to me that, you know, you thought as much about Frank as you did. I'm not usually cutting edge on music all that much.
And I find that to be not the most accurate statement either, because whenever we road trip up to Waterloo, I know you listen to a lot of Sirius and you listen to a lot of, like, the XMU and the College Station, the Underground Station.
That's true.
And you've told me that you've told students about bands before they knew about them, and they'll come back to you later on. Holy crap, you were right about so-and-so. So I
say
you know your way around the musical horn, too.
Like Avett Brothers and Wilco and bands that are, you know, less, more mainstream than Frank, but still not known to that many people, I guess, at least not at K-State, whatever. But, yeah. I had somebody go see that Frank Turner show that was in my class in Lawrence and was just, like, so grateful. I mean, I could tell he wasn't just kissing up because I was teaching his class. So that was pretty cool. I'm going to read this just off of – just to give people an idea off of Try This at Home, because there's no such thing as rock stars. These are the lyrics. There's just people who play music. And some of them are just like us, and some of them are dicks. So quick, turn off your stereo, pick up that pen and paper. Yeah, you can do much better than some half-arsed, which is ass, English country singer. And then he sings it so fast. You know, we write love songs in C and politics in G, sing songs about our friends in E minor. So tear down the stars now and take up your guitars and come on, folks, and try this at home. Don't try.
Encouraging you. He said this
too
in concert, and I should probably say this a lot in concert, but one of his credos is there is no such thing as, like, you know, a secret code that you need to crack to be a musician. He said, I want crowd participation because I want to hear you sing because I know you're all musicians at heart. He wants everybody to be able to do this if they feel like they can do it. And I will say this, I did it. I'm one of those people who, I got to be honest with you, I feel like I need to stake my claim at some of these shows. I went to the show last night by myself, which I have gone to, you know, fuck, I have no idea how many concerts I've seen, big and small, hundreds at this point, and I guarantee you I've seen 75% of them. I've gone to them by myself, mostly because where I live is, you know, usually a small enough town where I'm going to know people when I go there, but I'm one of these people that feels like I need to like, prove that I know the artist that I'm going to see. So when he's singing Try This at Home, I'm like bellowing out the lyrics at the loudest possible volume I can. And he gets to that part where he says, and some of them are just like us and some of them are dicks. And I just threw both of my middle fingers in the air and I heard people laughing. And I was like, this is it. I staked my claim. I planted my flag and I said, I am a fucking Frank Turner fan right here.
That's so awesome.
I was glad that we were able to kick the set off with that one.
Well, and you know, it sounds like the show that it was a little bit more like the first show I went to where damn near everybody knew the songs. Second show, it was still a majority of people, but there were a few people that were, you know, I brought some people there that didn't know him that well, that just trusted my instincts, and they enjoyed it. But the first show I went to was just all just diehard, crazy Frank Turner fans, and that makes it pretty cool. I think my proudest moment at a Frank Turner show, and it's not saying all that much, is because I've been up there singing the lyrics to everything because I was all fired up, and he's getting ready to, you know, close it out. He's getting ready to do his encore, and I remember what he's saying, but I'm just like, love Iron Song. And he starts in on that like 2 seconds later, and the guy next to me is like, that's awesome, man. I was like, yeah, thanks. That just made my whole night, you know, because I knew it wasn't going to be.
When you can connect with another fan who's as much of a fan as you are and you're not really sure about the people around you, that's always a nice moment.
Oh, it's great. And I knew he wasn't. I'll tell you the one thing I regret for you, and I wish he'd start doing this again, but he won't do it. I think he should still do it in America. I understand why he doesn't do it in England. But the Ballad of Me and My Friends, we were talking earlier off air about how I got started on Frank Turner, and it was very simple. My friend is Canadian, and she and friends do SODIs, Songs of the Year, and they make CDs, and they send them to each other every year, and then she'll give me several to check out. And one of the songs on one of the SODIs was The Ballad of Me and My Friends, and I was like, it's like a 2.5-minute song, tops. It's really short, and it's just it's still probably my favorite Frank Turner song. And because it's the one that got me hooked. And cool. It was certainly his first somewhat big hit. But when he sold out Wembley Stadium, he said, this song's about playing Nambuka and trying to come up from nothing, and I feel like I've made it now. And he didn't say he would never sing it again, but he said, I think I'm going to put this song to bed for a while. So let's sing this fucking together and go crazy. And sure enough, those people did. But I don't think he's played it in concert since. And I got to see him play that at the Record Bar as one of his closing songs, and that was really – that's like even more obscure, cool shit than even the concert itself.
That's awesome. That reminds me, I do want to go through, while I've got it called up here on my phone, I'm looking at his Greatest Hits album. For folks who need to buy this, it's called Last Minutes and Lost Evenings. Check it out. It's a Greatest Hits. It's 15 tracks, and just to go through, he played last night. I knew
and
Proof Rock before.
Eric, I think there's a deluxe edition of that that includes a live concert DVD, which, to me, if you're going to get Frank Turner stuff, you really don't want to start with a traditional album. You want to get something live. I bought the live CD, the first thing I bought, and I swear by that. It was I paid extra. It was an English release called Take to the Road, I think 2009. And, man, I mean, he's great, but he's like my friend that I took to the show, the same girl. She really liked Frank Turner. She enjoyed the show, but she liked like Glenn Hansard, who's another favorite of mine, much better. And there's no question that Glenn is a better pure singer than Frank Turner. Frank Turner's voice is not like going to win over Norah Jones or something. I mean, it's just it's the showmanship, it's the passion that he has, it's the lyrics, and I think he's a fairly good singer. I don't mean to disparage him, but, you know, it's the experience of the show. It's like Springsteen. I'm telling you, it's like Springsteen, and people will roll their eyes maybe, but it's the same damn thing. Bruce Springsteen doesn't have the greatest voice in the world either. He's fine,
right.
But man, he puts on a show.
It's like if you had a chick on a scale of 1 to 10 that was a 6, but she had a 10 personality. Maybe
exactly.
That's how Frank's voice is. So again, and I'm not totally. This is the thing. I'm not as familiar with his old stuff. I'm not as familiar with his new stuff. I do know that he played. The Way I Tend to Be, he played that.
Love that song. I think that's
oh, yeah.
That can make a big hit for him.
Yep. What is the... There's one other, like, pretty well-known... It was the first single off of Tape Deck Heart. Maybe
Recovery.
Recovery. And among other songs, too, that what he played off his greatest hits, he played I Knew Proof Rock before he got famous, I Still Believe,
sure.
Try This at Home, Substitute, Reasons Not to Be an Idiot. He played The Road... He played
I love The Road. That's my friend's favorite song. She loves it.
Oh,
that's the video to The Road is fantastic. If people want to YouTube the video to The Road, that gives you a pretty good idea about Frank Turner because he does 24 concerts in 24 hours. It's just the kind of shit he would do.
Right. and then he also played Long Live the Queen, which, dude, I can't listen to that song on album or live and in person without a tear coming to my eye. It's
mm-hmm.
the most ridiculous thing ever. But he played that. God, it was great. He played probably 2/3 of his greatest hits album. He played the 2 most well-known songs off of Tape Deck Heart. He played a bunch of other stuff I didn't know, but it all sounded awesome. The band was great. Just a phenomenal show. And just really quickly, too, like I said, the first act was called Cuckoo Kangaroo. If you got a 5-year-old, look them up. But they're goofy as shit. They were funny. It was like two guys with a backing track singing songs about rainbows and unicorns, dancing around, hopping down into the crowd and getting crowd participation. Everybody, despite the fact that this crowd was like your 25 to 44 crowd, and it was a Sunday night and we're all working people and we needed a good night's sleep, everybody was in a really good fucking mood. And despite how goofy this band is, everybody was dancing to them and having a good time. So all credit to Cuckoo Kangaroo from wherever they are in Minnesota. They're goofy, but they're funny. And then the second act, like I said, the Smith Street Band, I keep wanting to call them the Smith Street Punks, but anyway, the Smith Street Band took the stage, 4-piece punk band. I didn't know what to think in the first, like, 30 seconds, but that's all it took was 30. I'm like, these guys are pretty legit punk rock. They're a little bit more melodic, you know. It's not like they're thrashy punk or anything. They're just a good, solid Australian punk rock band. You can tell they're up there having fun, too. Talented. The singer's the lead guitar player, too, so he's doing some intricate stuff while he's singing. I thought that was really cool. Really solid rhythm section. Just great. Good enough for me to seek out the lead singer and tell him that he was fucking awesome. So if you're into that sort of kind of just dirty, not thrashy, but somewhat melodic punk rock music, just go ahead and give yourself 3 minutes worth of the Smith Street Band. They're worth checking out. I'm glad that I saw them. And when next time I get to my Wi-Fi connection and I've got $9.99 to burn, I'm going to go ahead and pick up one of their CDs.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out because he always has a good opening act. He had an Irish guy the last time.
Yeah, he actually made a point to say that they are his favorite punk rock band out there right now. So I'm assuming he didn't say that just because they're on tour. I'm assuming he said it because it's the truth and he invited them onto the tour. So that pretty much speaks volumes for somebody that he invites to, you know, spend 7 weeks on the road with him.
You know, he's open for some bigger bands as well. At least they were bigger at the time, and I'm drawing a blank on who those were. But, you know, so he's kind of been on both sides of it. I'm just going to ask real quick, there are a few songs that I wouldn't be surprised if he sang. I don't know if he did maybe Polaroid Picture.
Yes, he did,
Wherefore Art Thou, Gene Simmons.
I don't believe he played that one.
He tells a hell of a story when he does that. Maybe Tattoos, but probably not.
Yes,
like
no, he did. Yep, he did play. Yes, he did play that one.
So yeah, I think that well, that's great. I mean, he puts on a great show. I'm gonna go to his website and just double check because I did not know he was going to Omaha. I might have tried to go up there tonight just because I I don't have to be at work that early tomorrow morning.
Why not, dude? Why not?
Well, I wish I'd have known. I would have at least considered it, but I couldn't make it for the show now. But yeah. I'll look and make sure he's not coming around. And, yeah, try to get your friends to get him in Des Moines during the summer, because then I would definitely go if I'm not teaching, without question, because
nice.
It really is a fantastic show. So we said we were going to keep this pretty short and to the point. You know, we're just raving about how great this guy is, and maybe some people will check it out because of it. It's not the most critical show that you're going to hear, but I think that's one of the things that makes the website, I guess I can say our website now that I'm finally a host for once.
There you go. I like that.
Makes our website special. Any other comments that we left out, Eric?
The only other thing I can say, and this is a technical issue on my part, is that I got 3% battery on my phone, and I'm glad that I spent the last 10% of my battery talking about Frank Turner, because he's fucking awesome, just like everybody else at that show was. I appreciate you wanting to do a show on this. I'm glad I got a chance to talk about the only new artist in the last, like, 3 or 4 years that I give a shit about. So thank you. I really appreciate the time.
Well, that's great. And, you know, I had a rant, and I have a rant built up, but at some point I'll blog about it on Stunt Granny. I'm just really busy. I would say, and we aren't, you know, we've had our ups and downs, I guess, or people at the Stunt Granny have with the torch. But I would say, if you want to know my feelings on pro wrestling right now, read pretty much everything Bruce Mitchell has written over the past month and a half, either on the free side or in the newsletter about the current product. Vince McMahon is not your friend. He thinks you are a stupid mark, and he treats you like that. And all these people that worship him, and Triple H, and these people that want to have their picture with him all the time and think the WWE can do nothing wrong and they're the greatest thing in wrestling, you know, what they've done to Jim Ross has really set me off, where I feel guilty. And I used to do this when they put out My Favorite Wrestling. Every time I spent money on WWF, I felt bad about myself for giving them my money. And that's where I'm at right now. Those people are just... some of them are not good people, in my opinion, and they really rub me the wrong way, and you shouldn't get so upset about an entertainment product. But, you know, they just to disrespect people the way they did Jim Ross is ridiculous. Anybody that watched that incident in California would say, those people, that was a great show, and they need to treat Ric Flair better, too. If you don't want him to talk about certain things, give him a script. They were looking for an excuse to fire Jim Ross. They did. The hell with him. That's my rant on wrestling, and we'll
very nice.
Elaborate on that another time. But, Eric, even though I started it, I'm going to say that it's great to talk to you. It's great to be heard by some people at Stunt Granny. I'll let you wrap it up and take it home.
All right, very nice. Well, for Vince McMahon, for Jim Ross, for Frank Turner, for everybody at Woolies, Des Moines, Iowa, for representing last night, and for Dan the Man Keister, this is Eric Nelson. This was a very special edition of Stunt Granny Audio. We will try to do better next time. Peace and green. Stunt Galaxy. Thank you.